Hello, my name is David Martinez, and today we're going to talk about the case against travel. I'm joined today by Todd, who is the CEO of Travel Oregon, traveler extraordinaire, been all over the world. I'm looking forward to hearing stories. But I want to get your thoughts before we get into your travels. There is an article that came out June 24th, 2023. Agnes Callard, and the article is called The Case Against Travel. It appears in the New Yorker. Have you had a chance to read
this? I have not read this
article. Oh, let me tell you about this article. I'm going to get your reaction in real time. I'm excited for this. So she kind of goes through all of the arguments a number of arguments as to why we should not travel. She starts off by saying, you shouldn't say that you love to travel. It says nothing about you. She quotes some people. She quotes G.K. Chesterton, says, travel narrows the mind. Emerson, who talks about travel as a fool's paradise. And then she says, you know, and Socrates and Kant, arguably the two greatest philosophers, they voted with their feet and they never traveled. And then she lands on Fernando Pessoa, who in his book, Book of Disquiet, says, I abhor new ways of life and unfamiliar places. Travel is for those who cannot feel. Let me get your reactions on that. Let's go piece by piece. What do you make of that?
Well, I think I'll start with the philosopher debate. As much as the article may edify Kant, I remember from my philosophy class in college that alongside Kant, you were also taught about Nietzsche. And Nietzsche was all about the tabula rasa. We were born as a clean slate. And all of our experiences, key word there, all of our experiences write upon that tablet and actually help form who we are and who we become as we move through life. And I would say, I would challenge, in fact, that chief amongst those experiences is our travel. As young people, it may just be traveling outdoors for the first time. It may be traveling to another city near our home for the first time, going to visit a family member, our grandparents, whoever it may be, that travel that is going to enrich us and give us those experiences. And then that travel can broaden from there as well. So
yeah, travel, you know, within the city, even within like the places where you are. You don't have to go to a different country necessarily to travel per se.
No,
I agree with that.
No, yeah. I mean, even if I were to speak very, shall we say, self-centeredly about Oregon and the travel and tourism industry, which is, you know, the bread and butter of what I do, we encourage Oregonians to get out and explore their own home state. We don't want them to feel they have to leave Oregon to have these great vacation experiences.
I completely agree. I 100% agree. I've said numerous times, Oregon, the Pacific Northwest, the most beautiful place in the world. And I can say that because I haven't been everywhere, but I've been to well over 50 countries and so forth. And I always say Pacific Northwest, Oregon in particular. Mm-hmm. For a long time, Oregon was kind of the best kept secret, right?
Agreed.
You had like Washington, people knew about Seattle. People, of course, know about California. And then in between these two states, you have this beautiful state, super green, mountains, mm-hmm. all kinds of hikes. I love Oregon. Yeah. We can get back to that in a second. But yeah, okay, so we have this fight or debate between philosophers. She goes on to say, very few people like to hear other people talk about their travels, right? She says, you know, we, you know, and she has the reader picture people who have traveled. Look, think of your friends who are traveling and how annoying are they when they come back and talk about how, about their travels. I'd love to get your thoughts on that, but I disagree with this. In fact, I love hearing other people tell about their travels. I love hearing stories. It doesn't make me think of them. You know, I don't think that they're that there's conceit or that they are bragging. They're telling stories that are that inspire. Right? What do you make of this?
Well, that statement alone in the article itself flies in the face of reams of research that's out there. When, you know, given what I do, we're always curious about and very interested about how folks find their information for where they want to travel mm-hmm. and what it is that inspires them to travel.
Yeah, you know, what's the number one thing?
Exactly. You start cracking the code on that and you're going to be more successful than in inviting people to your respective destination.
It's always stories that inspire you, right?
The number one source of information for folks is their friends and relatives.
Absolutely.
The stories that they're bringing back of the places that they went, the adventures that they had, the places they stayed, a new cuisine that they tried, whatever it may be, you know? So friends and relatives, number one source of travel information. Hard to believe that people don't want to hear people's travel stories when we're using it in that way.
So this is a part. We can both disagree with this. We both like hearing stories. She quotes Samuel Johnson, who traveled to France. And the only thing he learned about France is how much he appreciated his own country. He was happy and content at home, which again, it seems in the article that she's bringing this up as a way to say, this is why you shouldn't travel, because it's going to let you, you know, it's going to, all it does is let you know how incredible you have it at home. I would argue the opposite. I would say that's a very good reason to travel. Often you travel and you learn about a different country, different culture, and you say, huh, I kind of understand or like the way that it's done at home.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, absolutely. Again, whether it's the way we prepare our foods, the way we live our lives, the way we elect our officials, whatever, whatever we are exposed to as we travel, when we come back, it will either affirm for us why we love where we live,
yeah,
or challenge us maybe to seek ways that we might be able to make some improvements.
We're going to have to come back to this, because she does come back around later on and say, like, travel doesn't change you. You come back the same way as you left. But we'll get that in a second. She then says, I think one of the key phrases throughout in the article says, travel turns us into the worst version of ourselves, while at the same time convincing ourselves that we have become the best version of ourselves. I'm paraphrasing here. I'm not getting word for word, but that's the essence of what she's saying. It turns us into the worst version of ourselves, while at the same time convincing us that we are the best version of ourselves.
I don't even know where to start unpacking that, because I suppose that there are folks that travel for the wrong reasons, maybe to check boxes, or it's a chance to come home and brag, get, look what we did, look where we stayed, as opposed to sharing a story because, you know, it enriched their lives or changed their perspective. Two very different intentions, right? And very different motivations. So I just find that appalling and confusing to say that we would, you know, that it turns us into the worst versions of ourselves. There's the old movie about the ugly American, right? And if we're going over that way and we believe it's our place to, like, point out everything that's wrong in another country, again, traveling with the wrong motivation and the wrong intention. But if you're traveling with an open mind, an open heart, an open spirit, and you want to learn, you're open to trying new things and taking in new information, I think that's actually traveling as the best part of you, yeah, and returning home even better.
Yeah, it can, I think, in many ways. I'm happy to hear you say that, because I agree. And we should say, too, there was a part of me that did not want to talk about this article, because it feels like she's trolling, and there's been some pushback online. And I don't know why she wrote the article, why she published it. I'm not going to say, but because don't really know. I don't know for sure, right? But she has, you know, famously she's tweeted out something about how on Halloween we go to Halloween and my kids get the candy, and then that night I take it away and throw it away, right? So she puts this out on Twitter, and it's like, and then she gets a lot of responses, and her responses to the responses, you get the sense that she just maybe she likes to fight, or she likes to battle, but at the same time I do want to talk about it, because I think she raises valid points. My reaction to this article is, you know, this isn't necessarily the case to not travel. It's the case to change your perspective around travel, or why you travel, or how you travel. I think that would be a better title to the article. And incidentally, she did note in a different interview that she didn't choose the title. I guess the New Yorker came in and chose the title for her. I don't know what the original title was going to be. We can maybe reach out to her on Twitter and ask her, although I'm afraid of her answers. But it's interesting to hear you talk about the experiences that change you. You talked about new experiences when you travel. She then goes to a story. She's in Abu Dhabi. And by the way, she was born in Hungary, lived in Rome. So she's traveled. She was in Paris for an extended period of time. So she has traveled, right? But she talks about being in Abu Dhabi and how she signed up for this falconry experience where she has a falcon on her shoulder, and just talks about how horrible this experience was. She's not interested in falcons. She did it because there's top 10 things you do in Abu Dhabi, and how silly or ridiculous was this experience. So to hear you talk about how, you know, I think in her case, maybe she shouldn't have gone to this falconry event, or maybe somebody else who partakes or takes part in this event comes back with a deeper appreciation for falcons or discovers a long lost love of falcons. That's my sense. That's my reading of the story.
We try things to learn more about ourselves. And sometimes what we learn about ourselves is, I don't like that.
Right.
I don't like that food. I didn't enjoy that place. I didn't, what, you know, so the fact that she went and she tried, that's the growth experience. You go and you try, you push your own envelope, you push your own boundaries there a little bit. You tried something new. The fact that you learned that you didn't like it, I think it's totally fine.
Yeah.
You know, maybe she went into it with an interesting incorrect intention. She was doing it because she heard, this is one of the top 10 things I need to do, and I want to go to Abu Dhabi and I want to do the top 10 things.
Right. I need to maximize my time here.
Yeah.
What are the top 10 things you need to do? And this is one of them. And she's pushing back against that. And I would agree with her. I push back against the top 10, yeah, you know, top five lists. There's a lot more to say about that.
Yeah.
She talks also about how traveling is about suspending the normal. So you go, again, kind of following up on the story, you go to these countries, like you go to Paris and you go to the Louvre, or you gaze at the Mona Lisa, mm-hmm, and that sort of thing. When in reality, in your hometown, you never go to museums. And this to me feels a little bit more maybe a straw man argument where you're, what if you do go to museums? You know, what if we're in Oregon? What if I do enjoy the museums of Portland, or what if the museums in Newburgh, Oregon? Mm-hmm. You know, that I think that counters her, this argument. She's kind of creating a monolith of a tourist who doesn't do anything at home and then travels abroad and does all of the things.
Yeah.
Right.
But again, I would, my argument would be, so what? So I go and I tour the Louvre. I see the Mona Lisa. And it changes me. That experience changes me. So now when I come home, maybe I do become someone who begins frequenting my local art galleries and local museums because I was exposed to it there and now I'm curious. I come home curious.
Okay, so it turns you into the kind of person she wants you to be before you travel. When you come back from traveling and now you go to the museums. What's wrong with that?
Which again brings me back to her earlier statement about we return home, you know, thinking that we were the, you know,
best versions
of ourselves. And we go, you know, and it's like, no, I just find that so ridiculous in its, you know.
Okay, she says that you don't change when you travel though. She does argue that. So you talk about maybe you go to the Louvre and see the Mona Lisa and it changes you. She says you come back with the same interests, the same political beliefs as before, the person you were before you left, you come back the same way.
People that have known me for much of my life have told me that they've noted in me how some of my perspectives and positions and opinions have changed over my life. And they have actually been the ones to step back and go, however, I got to remember you travel a lot more than I do. And I find it interesting that that's where they go, that they see this, you know, this kind of opening. You know, I maybe haven't changed my position, but I am open to considering others' positions more than I was before, or they are still. And that's the change. You know, I may still be as resolute about where I was, but I understand their argument. I understand their perspective and why they're bringing it forward. Because I've traveled to their country, I now better understand their system, their way of life, and why they may feel as they do. Mm-hmm. And that's something you can't get unless you've been there. And I just find it fascinating that friends and family members basically immediately go to, oh, but you travel a lot more than I do, so maybe that's why.
Yeah, the example I bring up more recently, because I was in Japan. We had students come back from Japan talking about how clean everything is in Tokyo and Japan in general, and how there aren't any trash cans hardly anywhere. There's very few trash cans, whereas in the United States, it seems like there's trash cans every 20 or 30 feet, right? And there's a bit of a frustration that they feel, like, why can't we be better, you know, around this issue of trash or cleanliness? Or they talk about how quiet the subway is, the metro system, you know? Yeah. And I think, this specific example respond to her idea that people don't change? I don't know how she would respond to that. Because again, she's creating this like this idea of a traveler, right? And she's kind of giving them a personality, somebody who's going and being a little more cantankerous. Yeah. But there is a way to travel where you see that cleanliness in mm-hmm. Tokyo and you come back mm-hmm. and then maybe you don't do anything about it. Okay, mm-hmm. granted, maybe that's the where she says, you know, doesn't change you, but maybe you do some things, right?
Well, and maybe the space I could give to her argument would be, maybe those are latent within us, right? Maybe we desire a calmer life, a quieter life, a cleaner life. And when we go to Japan and we experience it, it's like, and it resonates with us so fully, we now want to come home and find a way to replicate that. Hmm. But it was already there. It was already latent within us. But we were able to see what probably in the business world we would call a best practice and now bring it back and say, how do I now replicate this?
Yeah. And I wonder if this also can touch on the idea that you come back a worse person, because now you come back and you're hypercritical of your own culture. You're hypercritical of people who, you know, just kind of throw things away or don't recycle. I know in Germany, there's a much stricter culture around recycling. Mm-hmm. My wife is German. We've often talked about how the way people recycle in the United States at the beginning, especially, didn't make a whole lot of sense. Mm-hmm. She's like, what do you mean you don't have to wash out the container before you put it in? Like, there's all these different things that mm-hmm. you would, and there's trash police in mm-hmm. Germany where they come by and they're looking at your trash to make sure you're, you know, following the rules and so forth. So maybe you come back from Germany and you're annoyed at other Americans, like, wait, get it together, right? So is that a point in her favor? Is she right?
Well, on an individual case, and I guess, as I hear the statements that are in the article, the troubling part is that they come across as being absolute. She sees these things as being absolute. There's no doubt in my mind that some people may come back individually and not be the most diplomatic in their approach. And they become far more kind of that, a little bit more of a, I don't want to belittle the word activist, but they become more
aware as well.
Yeah. They're both aware, and perhaps the way they're now delivering that message is not going to be as impactful as it could be, because, like you said, they're belittling the country, belittling their city, belittling their neighbors for not recycling more, whatever it may be. Come on, my dad taught me at a very young age, it's the proverbial, you attract more flies with honey than you do with vinegar, you know? So that becomes a personal statement though, whereas the article feels like such an absolute statement about why travel's bad.
Yeah.
And that's where I have fundamental disagreements with their approach.
Yeah. Obviously it can be bad. I mean, this is what we're saying, right? I think there is a way to travel that isn't necessarily good, or that maybe turns you into the kinds of things that she's saying, but it feels so specific. It almost feels like she has a friend that she did, that she encountered and had a conversation with, and just kind of wrote this article deliberately to mm-hmm. her or to him. Maybe not.
Well, there's no doubt that there are some challenges in the global travel and tourism industry because of how folks are choosing to travel, you know, and many of those are environmental. You know, they'll refer to it as the Instagram effect. Everybody's going to the same place, so that trail gets degraded. Those rocky outcroppings are becoming spoiled because everybody wants to go there and get the classic shot of X, fill in the blank.
Yeah. And you push back against this. You would say,
absolutely,
don't be that person who's going.
Yeah. When you look at the visitor guide, for example, that we do for Oregon, you know, we're encouraging you not to do that. We encourage you to find.
You encourage people not to go to Cannon Beach?
No. We encourage them that if they go to Cannon Beach, that it doesn't always have to be the same epic image from the same rocky outcropping. Or if you're going to go up the gorge, you know, if you feel compelled to see Multnomah Falls because it has been noted as the most photographed waterfall now in the United States, it's actually eclipsed Niagara.
6 years and I've never been to Multnomah Falls. Do you know why?
No.
It's so hard to get a permit. Can you hook me up with a permit? After the show, we'll talk.
Yeah. Absolutely. But one of the things that we do, I mean, that waterfall corridor is dozens of miles long, you know, and there are numerous waterfalls there for people to explore. Some you actually have to get in the creek and wade up through the creek to be able to get to the waterfall
itself. Those are the ones I want to go to.
You know? So there's some magic places out there. And so encouraging people to disperse both dispersed throughout the week, dispersed throughout the region, dispersed throughout the year. That's the way we need to, as tourism development people, tourism marketers, need to be thinking about our destinations, and not everybody's there yet.
Yeah. She ends the article with, fortunately, a caveat, I suppose. She says, traveling is fun. Traveling can be fun. Okay, so granted, it can be fun. But she urges us not to attach to it some sort of, you know, vast significance or aura of virtue. I think this is what she's pushing back against, right? This idea that I'm a world traveler, therefore my life is imbued with this deep sense of significance and purpose, and I'm a better person. Mm-hmm. And I would 100% agree with that. This is a part of the article where I think she could have made the same points. You should talk about attracting with honey. You know, maybe not, because maybe you're this clickbaity, so you get people to read it to get to the point where you should still travel, but you should think a little bit more deeply about how you travel, about the impact that you have. Because you're right. I mean, the environmental impact. We talk about the carbon footprint, sure, and so forth, mm-hmm, can be important. But you touched on something really important. Some of the responses, which is, you know, there's a debate that she has with Chris Arnaid, I think it is, and he's a photographer, been all over the world. And it seems like he pushed back against the article as well. He wrote an article, I forget the title of it, something about being a thick traveler. So and part of that whole article is trying to give you a sense of what is possible through a deeper connection with these places. So he talks about traveling slower, going to fewer places, you know, getting deeper into the culture. But it seems like they both agree, right? So it's like two ways of saying the same thing, one being a little bit more kind of combative, mm-hmm, and the other one saying, you know, let's go, let's travel, let's see the world, but let's be a lot more introspective. I often say, you don't learn from experience, you learn from reflecting on your, mm-hmm, on your experience. It's a quote attributed to Dewey, although I don't think, mm-hmm, in my research I couldn't find anywhere where he said it. But I love that phrase, because like, all right, let's travel.
Yeah.
But let's not just think that we're being changed. Let's reflect on that experience. And I think that's where the change comes from.
Well, and to your point, had you not had the experience, you would have nothing to reflect on.
Right, exactly.
So I do not disagree with the author of the article regarding travel can be fun. One of the inherent positive attributes of travel is the fact that it has that ability to afford us the chance to relax and to reflect. Some folks only go to a place just so that they have that opportunity. They don't need to worry about packing and unpacking. They just want to go to fill in the blank, cabin in the woods, a beach somewhere, whatever their experience may be that they're seeking, so that they have that opportunity to rest and reflect. And some of the mentors in my life, business folks, have told me that you need to do everything you can as a business person when you're traveling on vacation to be able to protect that bubble. Don't let work in, you know, as best you can, because if you do, the bubble gets burst and you have to then reestablish this bubble of the vacation. And the point is that they are there to relax. They are there to make sure that they're affirming that connection both with themselves as well as with perhaps a spouse, their family, friends, others, and the sheer value in that. And as much as I've noted a couple of different studies, and it sounds like the author is here too, there's one that talks about how we, especially as Americans, have decided that buying stuff doesn't make us happy, but buying experiences does, because the experiences do give us the opportunity to reflect. And somewhat, maybe oxymoronically, they find the endorphins that are cued into happiness are actually highest when we're planning the trip. Oh, not when we're on the trip, but we're getting excited about taking that trip. And that's when the endorphins are actually highest.
Yeah, I that resonates with me a lot. I love planning trips. That's part of my job and part of my role. And so I enjoy it, because as you're planning it, you're envisioning all of the possibilities, you know. And yeah, and so you have kind of the three phases, right? Planning the trip, which is exciting, and all the possibilities. You have the actual trip where unexpected things are going to happen, mm-hmm, and you have to kind of deal, mm-hmm, with that, you know, those expectations and so forth. And then the post-trip, mm-hmm, where you have the kind of reflecting on the trip and changing, yeah, for the better, hopefully, yeah, but maybe. Yeah, one of the things she says too is that it's not a given that you're going to change for the better. It's not a given. She says this about novels. Like she says there are two things that are, she doesn't say this in the article, she says it in a different interview, but she says there are two things that people are kind of assume are a given, that you're going to change for the better if you read more, if you read more novels, and if you travel more. She's like, why? Why is that a given? It's not necessarily true that you change for the better. And I don't necessarily disagree with her, but I think it can if you allow for that space for reflection. And that's hopefully where the reflection takes you to some places, some areas of your life in which you need mm-hmm. to change for the better. Mm-hmm. And that can happen through novels, and it can happen through travel.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
There are some responses. You know, it's funny, I was reading, because I wanted to hear, I wanted to see if there had been any pushback, because it's so, I mean, even the title, right? Mm-hmm. Published in The New Yorker, The Case Against Travel. There's just, and she's right. There is this aura around travel. But it's funny, one of the responses, I think it was on Reddit, where somebody wrote, one of the top comments was like, this article has convinced me that I wouldn't want to travel with her. I thought that was so funny. because she does come across as sort of like somebody who's going to kind of put a damper on the experiences, or I'm not going to go to this Falcon experience because that's, you know, top 10 list and so forth. But I do, I wonder if we could say, you know, this is the case against travel. You're the CEO of Travel Oregon. What is the case for travel?
Well, the case for travel is manifold. And knowing that we have limited time with our time together, I'll just articulate them very, very quickly. We are first and foremost an economic development agency. So if we're inspiring travel to and within the state of Oregon, we're helping create economic activity and jobs for Oregonians, good jobs for Oregonians, career opportunities for Oregonians. And that's chief amongst why we do what we do. But there's also something to be said for since we've discussed Kant and Emerson and Socrates, you know, bringing in one of those great American philosophers, Mark Twain, you know, reminding ourselves that travel is fatal to prejudice, narrow-mindedness, and bigotry. You know, it's only by being exposed to other folks, other cultures, other ways of life, that we have an opportunity to kind of measure our own life and experience and culture. And I think it's been shown through, you know, both anecdotally as well as through empirical research, that some of the strongest diplomatic tools in America's, and for that matter, other countries' toolbox, is travel. Mm-hmm. You know, when our citizens travel to other countries in return, we feel differently about those countries, usually in a very positive way.
Yeah, or they can be in a positive way.
Well, it can be in a positive way because you've probably made that personal connection to folks. And I know it's very true for me. When even a business trip transcends business, and you have an opportunity to have a personal interaction with somebody over dinner, it changes. Yeah. It changes me. It changes my perspective on things.
And that's one of the things I argue as well. There's a celebration of differences that can happen as well, which maybe sounds a little trite or sounds a little, you know, gimmicky perhaps, but it's true. It's true. You know, as a Christian as well, when you travel and encounter other cultures, I encourage students as well to worship with other Christians around the world. Mm-hmm. And you're going to see differences in the way that they talk about their faith, or the way that they represent their faith, or the way they act out, you know, in different services. And another thing that happens too when you travel is people don't realize that it can be some of the loneliest times of your life. You're in a new place, a different, you know, you have a weird, strange encounter with somebody, and you don't have those mechanisms in place to protect you. And I think those are the places where, again, deep introspection, reflecting on the experience, there can be changes that happen. You've mentioned the great philosopher, writer, Mark Twain. I'll mention another great philosopher, writer, Rick Steves. you may have heard of it. His famous tagline is, you know, travel is life intensified, mm-hmm. or something along mm-hmm. those lines. And I think that's been true for me. Traveling has been a life, and it is kind of it's parenthetical. It's a different experience. You're not looking for the same things that you have here, but it is intense. And I think that intensity, when reflected upon, can mm-hmm. can be amazing. All right, we're now at the time in which we spin the globe.
All right.
And the idea is I spin the globe, you put your finger down anywhere, and then we talk about if we've been there or not. Mexico? Looks like it's Mexico.
All right.
Have you been to Mexico?
I have been to Mexico.
Tell me about Mexico.
It's always been on business, unfortunately. It's never been a leisure vacation. It's so.
Do you try to tack on some leisurely stuff when your business trips, though?
Or? It depends on where I am in my usual travel schedule, but there are some trips where I'll add a day or two, or if the trip is long enough, you're there over the weekend, you obviously can't conduct business on the weekend, so then you've got an opportunity. Nice. Opportunity to relax a little bit. So, but have been to Mexico mostly, almost exclusively in Mexico City.
Okay.
Because we were there doing business, working with the travel trade of Mexico, the airlines of Mexico, trying to encourage more air service to the U.S. and especially to Portland, Oregon.
I don't think I've been to the capital, DF, Mexico. My impression of the city is that it's a very big, bustling, busy, dirty city. Changed my mind.
It is a very big, bustling, wouldn't call it dirty though,
okay,
city. It is one of those cities though that is like built upon itself, okay, you know, over time. It's just kind of like, we just need more. So we'll, and so, or if the city was for whatever reason level, they'll just build on top of it. And it's, in that regard, it's fascinating. But the cuisine was fascinating. The cultural immersions that we had the opportunity to experience both with dance and music in nice. Particular and yeah. art, absolutely fabulous. So was very lucky to be able to be down there as part of a delegation for the entire U.S.
Oh, nice.
And so the Mexico government also wanted to make sure that we had a chance to better understand and appreciate their culture so that we could obviously then better market yeah. to the people of Mexico.
I guess my prejudice against most capital cities, when I think about Rome, I think about a big, dirty city. I think about Madrid, a big, dirty city. All of the major capital cities, I think of like super crowded. That's my go-to answer. Mm-hmm. But then DC, I felt the same way. I pictured it as like a big, dirty, and then until I went and visited and it turns out it's not. It's quite clean.
Fascinating, isn't it? It's really.
So I imagine it'd be the same with Mexico.
DC is and you're right about DC, by the way. DC is an beautiful, beautiful city and very, very clean. So, you know, and to your point, maybe surprisingly so, but a great, truly great American city. And, but yeah, with Mexico, I mean, big, bustling. I mean, it's huge.
Yeah,
it's
so huge. I have to go, I guess, because I need to change. You know? And it's funny because I don't know, Quito has felt the same way. Here's a major capital city and I picture it a certain way and then I get there and it's beautiful parks and I need to change my prejudice against major capital cities, I guess. I've been to Mexico. I've been to Hidalgo, which is a just north of Monterrey. Mm-hmm. I think it's a climbing destination. There's a place called Potrero Chico. So I'm a climber, and mm-hmm. this place is spectacular. It's amazing. They've done a really good job of for tourism. They've made it very easy to go and spend a week, 2 weeks climbing this incredible rock, eating the food, enjoying the culture. It's, mm-hmm. it's incredible. And then I spent a week in León, Guanajuato, mm-hmm. which I don't actually know exactly where it is because it was a long time ago and it was a part of a soccer thing. It was like mm-hmm. our preseason. Mm-hmm. So same thing. We got to play soccer against some teams and I love it. It's interesting because Mexico has this, there is a, how do I phrase this? A kind of a dual contradictory impression that Americans have. Some mm-hmm. some want to retire there and live the rest of their lives out in mm-hmm. Mexico, mm-hmm. and some are kind of deathly afraid of going to Mexico. I've talked to people who talk about, I would never go to Mexico because of kidnappings or mm-hmm. you know, gangs or the drug cartels and so forth. Have you encountered this?
I've encountered perceptions.
Have you ran into the drug cartels in Mexico?
I have never run into the drug cartels, to my knowledge, while I've been in Mexico, and you know, but I have friends and relatives that is their vacation of choice. Okay. They'd love to go to the beaches of Mexico, you know, somewhere outside of Guadalajara, Puerto Vallarta, whatever, you know, and they always will talk about how they wanted to get out of even those cities and find that quaint little inn or an Airbnb or whatever it might be that they were able to enjoy, you know, and not have a more traditional, perhaps for them, resort experience.
Sure.
And or So they love it. Yeah. Many of them are also fishermen, like me. So they love to be on the beach so that they can take the charters out and then come back in and work with their guide and have a little something on the beach that night with over the fire. And, you know, it for them, it's absolutely their vacation.
This ties back to the article we were talking about earlier, because there is a sense that, you know, this is the experience, kind of the postcard brochure experience that you can have in Mexico. And then when you go and to hear people say, I want to branch out of this, I don't want to partake in this, even though this was the original reason for coming down here. But they quickly realize how maybe manufactured it is and how there's something that's can be more authentic. And then you go and seek that out. But even the seeking out often can also feel it's funny because, you know, Chris Arnada, we referenced earlier, he's got this response about traveling as like cosplaying, I think it is, where you kind of, you take on this persona, this like traveler, right? And so you go to these resorts in Mexico and quickly realize that I'm above this. And so I'm going to branch out. I'm going to try to find the quaint little town. But even that branching out can feel a little bit gimmicky in that sense.
It's a little like you mentioned earlier too about the top five and top 10 lists. Some people will live by those when they're planning their trips because maybe that's where their comfort level is. They feel, I've always wanted to go to Mexico. I've always wanted to do a beach experience. I don't know where to go. I don't even know where to begin planning. I don't have any friends or relatives that have been there that I can turn to for advice. And so they find guidebooks and top fives and top tens, and they go that way. Other people say, I find the top five and top 10 lists so I know where not to go, you know, because I don't want to go there. I want to get off that beaten path. I want a more intimate personal experience. So
I run into this because people ask me, I've traveled extensively, and so they want to know where should I go, right? Yeah, I mean, and sometimes it's like, where should I go in the world? And sometimes I grew up in Spain, so they ask me, I'm going to go to Spain for 10 days. What should I do? And I always feel there's a responsibility. Like I need to tell them kind of the top things that they're going to have this amazing experience with or encounter. And at the same time, I kind of want to be like, no, go find your own, you know, go walk around Madrid, walk until you discover something. Mm-hmm. And that's going to be way more meaningful than the little restaurant that I tell you about. What a great way to tie this back into the article. My experience in Mexico has been phenomenal, incredible food. Now I need to go visit the capital to change my perspective. It's been great chatting with you. As always, we like to encourage our listeners to travel, to see the world, to experience new things, and to be careful most of the time.
Absolutely. David, thanks so much. Really a pleasure to be here with you.
This video podcast is a production of George Fox Digital. To find more material like this, you can subscribe to George Fox Talks on YouTube, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever else you listen to podcasts. Our team really appreciates your feedback in the form of likes, comments, and reviews, and we'd really love to hear what you think. To sign up for our weekly email list and to keep up to date with the latest episodes and publications, you can check us out on the web at georgefox.edu/talks. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you in the next episode.